Welcome to another episode of the Blazer Banter Podcast. I'm Eric Gunderson, the Trailblazers beat writer for the Columbian. Today I'm joined by Bleacher Report and NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk writer Sean Hyken. Sean covers the Bulls in Chicago, and we talked a lot about the Bulls, a little bit about the NBA, and some general basketball talk for you. Hope you enjoy. All right, thanks. Last week, also a pretty talented, great writer. You've probably seen his work at NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk, and also at Bleacher Report as a Bulls columnist. Sean Hyken, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm doing good. Just sitting here watching bits and pieces, or was watching bits and pieces of the Bulls and Nets game from last night.
I don't know why you do that to yourself, but I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the Bulls game against the Warriors where they were kind of dismantled.
Yeah.
But I feel like anybody against the Warriors right now is pretty much going to get dismantled, except for, you know, the Spurs or something when they've got all their guys, just because that's how good the Warriors have looked.
Right. Right, yeah, and I was extremely impressed with the Warriors after seeing them in person. They look so like they. I still think the Spurs are going to win the West just because they're the Spurs, but I would not at all be surprised if the Warriors made the finals or even won the title.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors, they look great, and that was an impressive display, I thought, when Draymond Green was going off against the Bulls. And that was the first game they had Taj back, right?
Yeah.
And I need to get some water. How's Taj looked? Does he look? I mean, I haven't been watching as closely as you have. I mean, you've been at the United Center all season. How does Taj look right now compared to his form before he got injured in the game against Portland back in November?
Taj looks basically like himself, but there's been a kind of a bigger issue with the Bulls where, you know, and you've been hearing them talk about this, the defense hasn't been up to standards, and Taj and Joakim have both talked about how the trust isn't there, and, you know, it looked a lot better last night against the Nets, but, you know, again, that's the Nets, like, they're a complete train wreck right now, and they were missing some guys, but, you know, I think Taj, individually, I think Taj has been fine.
Yeah, Woj bomb actually about the Nets just now. Darius Morris, former training camp Blazer, signs with the Nets.
A game changer.
Yeah, real game changer.
The Nets. I mean, the Nets are title favorites now, right?
Yeah, I think that really swings the pendulum. Chicago, Toronto, Cleveland, they're on high alert now. All their front offices because of the Darius Morris signing.
Yeah, man, it just takes the Nets to a whole different level. They're so much more dangerous now.
Yeah, 8-12 the Nets, but let's stop talking about them. The Bulls.
Let's stop talking about the Nets forever.
Yeah, yeah. The Bulls, we talked about Taj Gibson got hurt in the last meeting against the Blazers. Derrick Rose didn't play. Pau Gasol didn't play. Obviously, Jimmy Butler has been very, very good for the Bulls this year. He's probably been their best player, right?
I would say Pau has actually been their best player overall. I mean, it's very, you know, it's a toss up between him and Jimmy. But, you know, between the two of them, those have been their two most consistent players.
And Jimmy, take us through for maybe those of us that don't know the specifics of the he was offered a deal. That he thought wasn't up to snuff. Was that what the case was with Jimmy Butler?
What I've heard is that the deal that he turned down was about 4 years and $40 million, and that, you know, if they had been willing to go up to $12 million a year and give him, you know, 4 years $48 million or 4 years $50 million, that would have been enough to get it done. But now, you know, he's decided he wanted to just sort of take his chances that he could get a bigger deal as a restricted free agent. And, you know, clearly that, as I wrote last night, clearly that gamble has paid off. And, you know, he's probably going to get like a Gordon Hayward or a Klay Thompson type of max deal next summer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I know that even with the salary cap expanding, expected to expand in the next couple of years, I know from having read things about the Bulls that their owner Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't like to play the luxury tax. So, but now they're going to have to be forced to overpay, and probably, I mean, are they projected to be in the luxury tax this year?
They'll be just under. If they max out Butler, they'll be just under the luxury tax, but they won't really have a lot of room to make other moves.
Right, and that beloved flexibility, especially when you've got the injury history of a guy like Rose, is something that you really want. But yeah, very interesting. Obviously, you know, a different couple of games for the Bulls lately. Has their defense, I know their offense has gotten better, but has their defense been as good this year as it has been perhaps within the last few years?
It really hasn't, and you know, the numbers might actually even be a little bit misleading there. They're top 10 right now, I think. I'm actually looking this up right now. They're ninth in defensive rating right now. They give up 101.8 points per 100 possessions, but they've been in the top 5 each of the last 4 years that Tom Thibodeau has been coached. They've even been, you know, they've been number 1 a couple of those years, or number 2. So, you know, they have kind of a history of being, you know, the best defensive team in the NBA, or one of them. And now, you know, they're top 10, which is still pretty good, but it's not what it has been. And they didn't really lose any significant personnel. And if anything, you know, they got their starting power forward spot is, you know, they had the upgrade from Carlos Boozer to Pau Gasol, which is a little bit of an upgrade defensively. Pau isn't the defender he was a few years ago, but he's certainly better than Boozer. But Boozer, what Taj and Noah have both been talking about is just that, like, all these guys, since it's a lot of new guys, they don't really know each other's tendencies yet. And, you know, Nikola Mirotic, the rookie, is playing heavy rotation minutes now. And he's, you know, like most rookies, especially guys who come over from the Euro leagues, don't really know NBA defenses, let alone something as demanding as Tom Thibodeau's defense. And the other thing is that Derrick Rose has been in and out of the lineup. And when he has played, he hasn't been as aggressive as he was before he had the injuries. So it's, you know, there's a lot of moving parts there. I think the defense is going to come around, and it's already starting to come around. They were, you know, bottom half of the league, or like middle of the pack earlier in the year, and now they're already at the top 10. I think it's just going to keep getting better as they get more games together with like all their core guys.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because, you know, it's really easy to notice. I feel like, at least for me, for someone who doesn't watch the Bulls on a nightly basis, for when I tune into a Bulls game, they look like a more open, you know, free-flowing offensive-type team. But, yeah, no, it's interesting to see. But, you know, do you think that – I know that you said the numbers may be a little bit misleading, but do you think that maybe giving up even a little bit of offense or a little bit of defense for a better offense that isn't in the bottom 10 in the league like it has been the last few years worth the trade-off?
It could be. And I said, certainly their offense this year is so much more dynamic than it was. Even with Rose, you know, Rose hasn't really been himself yet. He looked pretty good last night. And, you know, there had been all this talk, you know, from Thibodeau and from other people that he needs to be more aggressive and not settle for as many jump shots and, you know, try to attack the rim more. And he definitely did that last night. And, you know, he had one of his best games of the season. He had 23 points, I think. And he, you know, he attacked the rim, made some layups, got to the free throw line. So, you know, last night was encouraging, but he still hasn't been, you know, where they hope that he will be by the time of the playoffs. But even with that, their offense is so much better than it was. First of all, just because of how much better Jimmy Butler has been. And then also, you know, all the different things Pau Gasol can do offensively. You know, he can hit that mid-range jumper. He can score in the post. You know, he's a lot more versatile offensively than Carlos Boozer was. So they have other weapons now besides Rose, and that's the That's the difference.
Now, did Noah have Noah had off-season surgery of some sort, didn't he?
Yeah, some kind of knee surgery. We don't know the details about it. I think they said it was just like arthroscopic, or like it was just cleaning stuff out. But it's been kind of I don't want to say it's like, I mean, it might be more serious than we thought, basically, because he has the, there have been games where he just, like, can't move up and down the floor. And then there are other games where he looks fine. So it's the kind of thing where he really has to put a lot more work into even just getting his knees up to game shape. And now he had an ankle injury the other night, and so that's why he didn't play last night. And he's been day-to-day because of that. He hasn't practiced the last couple of days. So it's just kind of, you know, his health is definitely a concern. And he hasn't been himself when he has played.
And also, I know he was in the rotation earlier, that Doug McDermott also has a knee injury.
Yeah, we don't even know the exact details of that knee injury, just, like, he had some swelling. He's been out of the lineup the last few games, and he hasn't really been in the rotation that much anyway. I think it's because Thibodeau, first of all, he hasn't really learned the defense yet, and you know how it is with rookies trying to learn that defense. It's just, it can be kind of rough for them. But then his offense, like in college, his calling card was his shooting. And, you know, he's one of the best shooters in college basketball history. And, you know, people thought that was going to, you know, translate over right away to the NBA. And it just hasn't so far. And he's taken a lot of open jumpers, but he's just been missing them. So it's going to take a while for him to come in. I still think he's going to be a good player, but it's, you know, it might take a little longer for him to come around than we thought, maybe.
Yeah, I thought McDermott was definitely going to have no problems coming in shooting the ball, but apparently he has. I mean, so, yeah, shooting 23% on the year before he got injured. But other than that, Kirk Heinrich still playing. Does Kirk look a little bit better this year?
He is what he is at this point. He's an okay defender, and he's fine as long as you don't play him on the ball very much, but... You know, Kirk just sort of is what he is at this point.
Yeah, and Aaron Brooks, I know that Tom Thibodeau loves the backup point guards that have been unsuccessful and making them successful. Aaron Brooks was, you know, once NBA Most Improved Player. He basically won a playoff series for the Rockets against the Blazers a couple of years ago.
Yes.
I mean, it looks like his numbers so far this year, when he comes off the bench, have been really good.
Yeah, and there's been a little bit of regression. You know, the first couple weeks of the season, he was shooting something ridiculous, like, you know, 65% from three. And for the first couple weeks of the season, obviously that's come down a little. But, yeah, he's a guy who just sort of comes in and creates his own shot and just gets buckets, basically. That's all he does. He's kind of a liability on defense. You sort of have to have him in there with Jimmy Butler in order to be effective, just so they don't lose all their backcourt defense. But, yeah, he's sort of the best, I think, out of, like, all the players that they've had in that role over the last few years. You look at, like, a DJ Augustine and a Nate Robinson and a John Lucas. He's the guy who was the best player of those guys coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not really surprising that he's thrived in that role. But, yeah, he's been great.
Yeah, do you think the injury, I mean, they obviously have had some injuries. Rose was in and out of the lineup earlier this year. I mean, they're 13-8 right now, but do you think that's mostly just, you know, some East teams really performing maybe better than expected, like Atlanta? I mean, I know a lot of teams expected Atlanta to be good, better from last year to this year, but they've really improved again, 15-6. But do you still see Chicago, fighting for a top three seed? I mean, can they win the division, you think?
I think they can win the division. And, you know, it seems like the Cavs have kind of gotten it together the last couple of weeks. I think they've won 8 games in a row now. They're obviously more of a threat than they were a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I think the Bulls could be right there. It's gonna take, you know, the defense is gonna have to figure itself out. The Derrick Rose is gonna have to, you know, play consistently the way he played last night. And that's, you know, those are all things that are kind of doable, but they're not, you know, guaranteed by any means.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting race in that division. And then, you know, Milwaukee is right there. Indiana could maybe make the playoffs because that spot, I mean, Brooklyn seems like the only team that really, you know, Brooklyn's going to be in there for that 8th spot, but Boston could be there. There's going to be about 5 teams that could get that spot. The East is bad.
It's not good.
Yeah. I mean, Chicago to me has looked like the most, when they've been good, they had looked like the most complete East team to me. And to see the way that Golden State kind of demolished them was kind of, you know, at least to me, was like, I know Golden State's really good, but my goodness, the West is just so much better than the East.
It's brutal, and I think – I don't know what the – I don't have the standings in front of me, but as of a couple of days ago, the Mavericks were 16-6, which were – and that, which would put them 10 games over 500. They're the seventh seed in the West. And, like, I think out of the teams in the East, Toronto would be, like, a five seed, and then Washington and Atlanta would be, like, eight – would be eight seeds. And other than that, none of the West, East teams would be in at the playoffs at all in the West.
Yeah, that's it's crazy to see that. And you know, I saw, you know, Zach Lowe wrote about you know, thinking about ways to change a schedule and the idea of conferences and the playoffs and stuff like that. And I think it's a really interesting discussion because it's been like 15 years that it's been this way. Like, yeah. It has always been like, well, maybe the East will get generational talents because they all have bad teams, and then they'll, you know, all of a sudden they'll be better.
Who's the best player in the league? It's LeBron James, and he's been in the East his entire career.
And the East has still always been bad.
Yes.
So, like, this argument that the draft is all of a sudden just going to turn the tables for the East when it has not at all in the last 15 years, when East teams, I'm sure, have been getting number one. And like you're saying, LeBron's playing the East his whole career. And Wade was at one, you know, up there. They've had lots of great players in the East, but their teams are all just so bad.
And it's not good. It's really not good. And I don't know what there is to do about it. And maybe, you know, like they've talked about, maybe you move a few of the teams to the East. You move, like, Memphis and New Orleans, or like some of the Texas teams, just, you know, some of the teams that are sort of in that central part of the country that could really go either way for West versus East, move some of those in there. But then it's just like, what do you do? Do you move, you know, Milwaukee to the West?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and that wouldn't be really fair to those teams, because then those teams will never be able to make the playoffs ever if they have to suddenly play against those same teams.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some people float the idea of North and South. I don't know who it was, maybe, that pitched that, but like,
divide. Was it Cuban?
Maybe it was Cuban, of dividing it North and South. I think, though, that maybe, I know the schedule, I think Zach Lowe wrote that actually the schedule advantage when it comes to, you know, since the East gets to play so many games against the East, they have an advantage, and yet they still are all terrible. So I think that maybe the best way to do it would be to just keep conferences and then just reseed at the end of the season. I just don't see a way that you could get around, like, the scheduling part of it.
Well, did you see what they're going to – this is not quite – you know, this is only sort of tangentially related, but did you see the report today that the NBA, I think this is also from Zach Lowe, that the league is looking at possibly going with this idea that has been floated before, where, you know, you cut the preseason from 8 games to 4 and then spread the rest of the regular season out over an extra 10 days to sort of cut down on back-to-backs and, you know, help with the travel and with the scheduling and make it a little bit easier? That's something the league's apparently looking at doing, which I think is there's really no downside to that, because, like, I mean, I guess you lose a little bit of gate revenue from the preseason game, but, like, nobody takes those games seriously anyway. Nobody's going to care if you cut down those games.
Well, I mean, the one thing that Zach Lowe brought up in that article, I do see maybe some teams and even some players having a little bit of an issue with, is, like, the use of training camp and preseason to get in shape for the season. Uh-huh. Because, well, not just get in shape, but to get in work. Like, coaches like to get in plays, but, I mean, I remember I was talking to, we were asking, you know, players, you know, about the preseason, and the 44-minute game was a topic of discussion then, and
I don't think that actually does anything.
No, but, I don't think it really does anything either. I didn't even see that game, but I just don't see the point. I think the thing that holds NBA games back is the fact that they can call a zillion timeouts in the last 2 minutes of games. I mean, if you watch the FIBA last 2 minutes, where they can only call timeouts on dead balls, there is no stoppages. It goes a lot faster the last 2 minutes of NBA games. It doesn't take a half an hour. But at least that's – I see way too many timeouts being called by teams. Good teams don't call a lot, you know, a ton in those situations, like last basket, full court, all that stuff. But the we were talking about the preseason, and LaMarcus Aldridge was saying that he liked the preseason and he didn't want it to be shorter because he said that that's how he gets ready for the season, is he needs the full preseason. So that was interesting to me that, like, every player probably has a different opinion on whether the preseason matters or not. Some players hate it, but, I mean, it's weird to hear a guy like LaMarcus say that he loves it.
Well, the thing that the league likes about it is that the preseason is an opportunity, and they're really concerned with, you know, growing their league as a global brand and stuff like that. So I think they're concerned with, you know, the preseason gives them an opportunity to have a lot of games in other countries and sort of showcase games like that that maybe they wouldn't have in the regular season because of scheduling concerns. So I think that's the – I think that's for the league, that's the main drawback of eliminating – some of the preseason games is it give them fewer opportunities to have games in other markets that they really want to expand to.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting point, I guess, and for their global brand, that is a concern. But I think it'd be better for the global brand if less, you know, if the best players were all healthy during the biggest games. And I mean, obviously injuries are always going to be a part of the NBA. You can never get rid of them, but
right.
Getting
rid of a couple of back-to-backs per year for each team, I think would do wonders.
Yeah, definitely.
Just like make it so no team ever has to do the Denver-Utah
back-to-back. Yeah, that's rough. I saw also. I mean, I think Casey Holdall, the Trailblazers reporter.
Yeah,
our friend of the pod.
Shout out to Casey.
He was on the road, and he's obviously with the team, has great access behind the scenes. And he was posting some Instagram pictures of the team doing a workout, like doing an actual workout in the hallway of one of their hotels while they've been on the road. And, like, while that's great, what in the world are these world-class athletes doing having to work out in the hallway? Like, you know what I'm saying?
It's ridiculous.
And, like, they don't have time. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's just – the schedule is so ridiculous.
What does each team have, like, 18, 20 back-to-backs per year? If we could get that even just down to, like, 15, that's so much more. Like, it's not ideal. Maybe ideally you'd like to have no back-to-backs, but that would involve – you know, cutting some games off the schedule, which I think it's pretty clear that the players and the owners both don't want to give those games back in terms of the amount of revenue that they are walking away from. But, you know, they got to do something. And this, you know, something's got to give. And I think if the preseason has to give, that's the thing that I think people might miss the least.
Yeah. And although there are players like LaMarcus who enjoy the preseason, I could find several that also get sick of it after the first four games. So just like, you know, and that's what they're going to replace. I saw some others on Twitter. I can't remember who off the top of my head right now. And I'm sorry if you listened to this and you didn't, or just in general, if you didn't, if you said it and I didn't credit you, but about not just the international markets, but also like the suburban markets that a lot of times they play games in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It could be also a concern because they go to Ontario, California, and they've played games. The Blazers have played games in Eugene before, and things like that. Like
the Bulls played one in St. Louis,
right? And those are always, you know, other opportunities to increase the fan base and get people to, you know, make a trip to Chicago from St. Louis to go see a Bulls game or something,
right?
So yeah, I mean it'll probably have some consequences, but if it can improve the health overall of all the players, I'm sure I think all the fans would take that trade-off. But it was funny, back to the Bulls, when you were describing how when their offense has gotten really a lot better, but their defense maybe hasn't been as good. It's kind of funny, the exact opposite has happened with the Blazers, is their defense has gotten a lot better and their offense is just really inconsistent.
Yeah, and so tell me, I mean, you watch them more than I do at this point, but tell me what's up with Nicolas Batum. He seems like he's been making some shots more lately, but he also hasn't really been where he's been the last couple of years. So what's going on with him?
I really don't know. I know he had the knee injury, and he said he didn't have really a rhythm before the PRP injection, but he wasn't shooting great from three before that. I mean, it was the entire month of November where he was just awful from the three-point line. I know that he got a day of rest. I think I talked about this on the BizCast Ball podcast as well, with Corbin Smith, also a homie. He got one day of rest during training camp, so he didn't really rest a lot. Obviously, he had a big summer. Everybody plays during the summer, but not everybody's the best player on their team in a summer tournament. And that's what Batum had to do for France. And I think maybe in some ways, I think the load, he won't admit to it, but I think the load maybe it had caught up to him. But he looks better now. He looks like a little bit more spry. He's shooting the ball with a lot more confidence. So I think he's working his way out of that slump, even though nobody on the Blazers could really hit a shot, except for Wesley Matthews, who always seems to be able to hit shots.
Yeah. It seems like that's the kind of thing that's going to come around at some point in the schedule. Like, it's a lot worse than it has been right now. And, you know, the law of averages is just sort of that you know, it's going to come around at some point.
It should. I mean, that's what Terry Stotts has been saying. We've been asking him about the Nick stuff, and he's basically saying, you know, his track record is just too long of shooting a certain percentage from three-point range for the last few seasons, that it's going to turn around. It's not going to hang around where it was at, like, 23% or like it was a few weeks ago. So he hit some big shots against the Knicks, but, you know, everybody has good games against the Knicks. He's improving, and they think he will, but I think tomorrow's matchup should be good. Hopefully I'm hoping Noah plays.
Yeah, he might. They said he's day to day, so, you know, it's not impossible that he'll play.
Yeah, I mean, it should be. I mean, and also, we've never really seen, I mean, Rose had to, we've never really seen Rose against Lillard.
No, we really haven't, and that was the guy that Lillard kind of got compared to.
Right, and they are both Adidas guys. Lillard was basically the model for the D Roses for the last like 2 years when D Rose couldn't play. Lillard was wearing the Derrick Rose shoes every game, and he got compared to him obviously a lot with his style of game. But yeah, I mean, he only played. Derrick Rose played a half when he injured his knee last season, or played barely a half, and then he didn't play in this game this November. So should be the first real matchup between Lillard and Rose. So that should be fun to watch.
Yeah, it should. And I wonder if that dawns on either one of them. I'm sure neither of them are going to be talking about it tomorrow, but you know that's certainly going to be something that people are going to push.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about? I mean, where are the Bulls at right now? Do you think that do you think they win tomorrow? I mean, obviously, you know, predictions and stuff like that are kind of dumb, but how do you feel what the vibe is right now with the Bulls and just generally how they're going into this game?
Well, I think I think because they blew out the Nets last night, they have a little bit of momentum, but they also. You know, this will be their biggest test against a really good West team. Or they've played a few of those since they got back from their road trip. They lost to Dallas in double overtime. They lost to the Warriors. So I think they would really like to beat one of these, you know, Western Conference contenders just to sort of prove that they can, I guess. And, you know, doing it at home, which they haven't had a great home record for some reason this year. They're 3-6 now, 3-5, something like that, at home. So I think they'd like to win a home game. So this is definitely a game they're going to get up for.
Yeah, very very interesting stuff. What are your impressions? About the league so far? It seems like there's not that many really good teams. It feels like a really top heavy NBA season.
Well, it kind of is that every year. Last year, it was basically Indiana and Miami in the East, and then OKC, San Antonio, and the Clippers in the West that seemed like they had a real shot at, you know, winning the title or going to the finals. Now it's sort of, I mean, the West is pretty deep now because you've got, you know, you've got, you know, obviously you've got San Antonio is right there. Then you've got the Memphis, Golden State, Portland, and the Clippers are kind of getting back there. You know, the last couple of weeks they started off the season not great. But then, yeah, the Eastern Conference is still, you know, Toronto, Washington, Atlanta, and you're sort of waiting for Chicago and Cleveland. So it seems like maybe now there's like four or five teams in each conference instead of two or three. So it's a little bit – it's actually a little bit more even out than it was last year, but it's still not – it's still – there's a lot of bottom feeders.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very, very top-heavy. Lots of not very good teams at the bottom. But have you watched any Sixers – how many Sixers games have you watched this year? John? Yo. Sean?
Yo.
I lost you.
I don't know what happened there.
I don't know. We're back, though.
Okay.
But I was asking you how many Sixers games you've watched this year.
I watched the one they won against the Timberwolves.
But not very many?
I've seen like two or three.
Yeah.
I watched them when they played the Bulls, and they hung around. They've looked more competitive lately. Like, they haven't been winning games, but they've looked more competitive.
The Blazers, I remember they played Philadelphia. They were just talking about how hard they played and like how they were talking that Philadelphia played like really good, some of the best defense that they had faced in a while. Like after the Memphis game, I think they were talking about Philadelphia. And it was just kind of funny. Yeah, but they've got to be a little bit better, and I think they're maybe that, you know, they've got KJ McDaniels, who's awesome,
right?
And I mean, they still suck, but at least they're kind of fun to watch. They play an entertaining style of basketball, even if the way that they execute that style isn't that good.
Right. Now that's the thing. They play at a really fast pace. They have some fun players. KJ McDaniels. You know, KJ McDaniels might be kind of a, you know, if you go back to Wesley Matthews, a guy who was undrafted and then got like a huge contract after his rookie season just because he was so impressive. KJ McDaniels, you know, a second round pick, but he signed this really unconventional contract where he's going to be a restricted free agent this upcoming offseason. I think there are going to be some teams throwing some money at him.
Oh, definitely. I definitely see some teams throwing some money at him. I'm excited for tonight. It's always fun, LeBron versus Durant. That's going to be a lot of fun.
I wish that Boogie and Dwight were playing in the Kings-Rockets game, because that would be really fun, and because they're not, it might not be that fun.
Yeah, the DeMarcus Cousins thing was scary.
Yeah.
The viral meningitis, I remember...
Did you see that hot take from the Sacramento Bee columnist?
I believe I did, but can you illuminate?
It was basically saying that DeMarcus Cousins is, they're saying he's hospitalized with the flu, but he's actually just sick of behaving well.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Luol Deng had viral meningitis in the playoffs 2 years ago, and he almost died. Like, he was leaking spinal fluid, and he had to be hospitalized for, like, 2 weeks, and it was really scary. And, like, that's no joke. Like, it's nothing to take lightly.
Yeah, I saw that DeMarcus Cousins also had to have a spinal tap.
Mm-hmm.
That's some scary stuff, man.
It is, and it seems like he's progressing as expected, and he should be okay.
Also, what is the deal with all of the players in the NBA getting sick in mass?
Like, I know, right? Because like the Grizzlies will get the Grizzlies had like seven guys out, and then like the Hawks caught it, and. I think another team has gotten it at some point. It goes around.
Yeah, I guess
these guys spend a lot of times like in close quarters with each other, playing really physical games where there's a lot of contact with other people. You know, it's I can see how it'd be pretty easy for these viruses to spread.
Well, and I don't know. Did you see that the CDC released that like our flu shots might not be preventative against the flu this year?
I did not know that. I got a flu shot a few days ago. Maybe was it useless? Did I waste?
I don't know. I saw an article about it. I'm gonna look it up. It was from Reuters, I believe, and so it was from a real news source. So that was not encouraging. And maybe, I mean, I would imagine that as an NBA team, you have everybody get a flu shot.
Oh yes, I could imagine. So yeah.
So yeah, so they've been all been useless if that report is true. It seems like that's a real thing. I don't want to. Yeah, let's see. It says that flu shots are, according to CNN, it's not that they don't work; it's that they're less effective because the current virus has mutated. So, how about that?
Yeah.
So
that's a thing.
I guess NBA teams probably got caught on that too, even though we're not actually aware. We're not actually told what they get, with the exception of Cousins, which that's very, very serious. But yeah, Blazers, everyone on their team has been fighting off some kind of illness. And yeah, you said Memphis. Didn't Memphis only have like – they had like 7 active guys one game?
They did.
That's ridiculous. So yeah, whatever it is, they got to figure it out. Or maybe they have already figured it out, because you know how great the NBA is about figuring stuff out like that.
Yeah.
But anything else, Sean, about the Bulls, about the league, or about your work, maybe where people can check it out?
That should just about cover it. You know, I'm on Pro Basketball Talk on NBC pretty regularly. I'm on Bleacher Report, doing Bulls stuff several times a week. But, you know where to find me. I'm on Twitter at Hikin, HIGHKIN, and yeah, it's good to talk to you again, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just realized we didn't talk about the Coco.
We didn't talk about the Coco. That is true. The Warriors were a little bit too much in love with the Coco, and they had to rein it in.
Has it leaked who told them they could say that or sing that
song? I don't know.
Well, forever it will be a mystery that they ended the love with the Coco for the Warriors. But all right, thanks, Sean.
Yeah, take care.
All right.
All right, folks, thanks for listening to another episode of the Blazer Banter Podcast. Some good news. The Apple gods have blessed us. We are officially in the iTunes store, so you can subscribe to us. Search Blazer Banter in podcasts. It's in the sports section. So please subscribe and leave us a review.